This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz After Show. I thought we had music. What happened?
We do. There it is.
Yeah, we have a special request.
Okay, there it is.
You can't go wrong with Journey.
I got thrown off a little bit there.
You can never go wrong with Journey.
No, you certainly cannot.
Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz After Show.
Woo!
We're here. I've been gone for a while.
You have.
But I'm so excited to be back.
We didn't
all
stop
here.
Believing in you, Joe.
Thank you.
Didn't stop believing in me.
Oh, Nando.
We are all here with one wonderful addition. Nando has gotten considerably better looking again.
He does look like my long lost brother
there.
Such a big deal. I got a stunt double for this episode. That's what it is.
We have our favorite FBI task force member, Amir Arison Aram, right here in the building.
Thanks for having me,
Amir. Thank you for joining us on the Blacklist After Buzz After Show. We're so excited. We talk about you every single week as our guy. That's no lie.
You're kind of our favorite at the task force.
Oh, well.
That's true.
Don't tell anyone. There's something for everybody.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
Foreign diplomat. That's beautifully done. I don't know.
One of us called you Aram for a while. Was that you?
No, not me.
Who was that, Brad?
Who was that?
Oh, that's interesting.
It
is a constant error on set where people are doing hybrids of my name and Aram, and they're doing Amram, and then they on my stand-in, they always misspell and do like Amar. Nobody gets it right. It's like an ongoing kind of joke.
Okay,
I think Diego actually had to loop an entire episode because he said Aram instead of Aram.
Oh,
yeah,
well, see?
He was tired.
I'm a good company.
Do you feel better?
I feel great.
Okay.
Me and Wrestler are in the same boat. I love it. Well, we're here. Lots to talk about. We're gonna do our normal thing, and we're going to talk about the Blacklist, talk about this episode, The Scimitar, number 22. We'll break this all down, and then Amir's going to join us through that. And then after that, we will go one-on-one or three-on-one. Four-on-one.
Oh.
Whoa.
It's getting better and better.
I don't want to play.
Love an interview. We'll talk to him.
I'm not sure.
So, great. We're one episode away from the fall finale, right? So I love the way they break these down with the fall finale and the finale now.
You got 22 episodes. You get two finales.
Yeah. I love it. So,
and you get a pre-finale finale and you get a pre-finale finale twice. You get two pre's and two full.
NBC promo department did a great job of teasing this one out.
Absolutely.
Only one episode to go before the one episode. That's not the one episode.
Do you do radio?
That's
pretty good.
That's
in 3 months, you'll hear another pre-episode about the first episode that'll come after the next episode.
Finale.
Do you know that Harry Lennox, who plays director?
Yes.
Cooper,
he does your promos.
Does a lot of the promos.
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, because he's got that voice. Mm.
Wrestler.
Damn it, Nairobi.
Wrestler, please. we love Harry Lennox as well.
So do I. He's the best to work with.
He's
the best.
Well,
we've... Sure. He's still so fun and such a professional, and I'm learning a lot from him.
Good. Well, We have a lot to talk about in this specific episode, and then we want to hear all about all the behind the scenes, Black. We have questions for every for you on everyone. We want all the dirt, all the inside scoops. No, we'll talk about the Blacklist, and you're actually our first Blacklist guest, right?
Oh,
or no?
I believe so.
I think so.
So this is history in the making.
Yeah.
We did the full season last season.
Because all the they're shooting in New York all the time. They're shooting on the East Coast. So we do this as a recap show. It's kind of difficult to get people here.
That's true. We just got a little gap, which is actually why I was able to come out here.
We appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So appreciate it.
First impression, get some snapshot impressions here of episode 22 of number 22, The Scimitar. Julia, what did you think of this episode?
I like this episode. I thought it was definitely fast paced. I love it when Lizzie gets badass. You know, that's my favorite Lizzie, is when she's badass Lizzie or when she's pretending to be somebody else. She's sort of like an undercover persona. Those are my favorite Lizzies.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, I love me some Tom, so I'm happy to see him be bearded as he is.
Dreamboat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Punky Tom.
Okay, enough of that.
Julia loves beard. She's surrounded by him all on the show.
It's true. I make no bones about it.
I grew this beard for you when I was gone.
Thank you. That's very, very kind.
But is he, you know, so Tom, you're still in Tom? You want the super scruffed out Tom?
I am. You know, I like Tom Eggled as an actor, and I like what he's doing in this awful position that he's in. I like his interactions with Lizzie and the way he's handling it from just the small snippets that we've had. The Scimitar was the Blacklister of the week was an interesting Blacklister. He's pretty high up on the list.
Yeah,
actually.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
No, we're going to ask you about that.
Seems kind of high to me.
I'm going to ask you about that.
Waleed, he's actually also a friend of mine. I came from a theater in New York, so a lot of the actors that they're getting are old friends of mine, the Blacklister, so it's exciting. I had a few friends in this episode.
Oh, that's great.
That's cool.
It's reunion.
Yeah.
Flip, what did you think of this episode?
I love the reveal at the end. That was for me.
Spoilers!
Despite the fact that I've been wrong over and over and over again, I'm tired of it.
But it is the year flip-up.
Poor Anthony. I feel like I should tell Anthony.
Let it go, buddy.
I don't know, man. I don't think we're going to win. But yeah, I was dramatically wrong. I did not think that it was going to be Berlin's daughter, but somebody else probably did.
Yes.
I've heard that theory quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, we saw it on YouTube.
There's so many theories now that, you know, sooner or later, one of those theories
someone's
got to
be
true, you know, or lead the way.
I've got a pretty good track record this season. I'm just going to say. I'm going to back a little bit.
I want to be angry at you, but I can't because you've been right, like 85% of the time.
But you know, there's something I think that's fun about, like, so many people guessed that Tom was behind the door.
Sure.
And you know, I know we didn't get revealed to episode 5 or 6 this season.
Yep.
But it's still, dramatically satisfying to watch how it unveils.
Absolutely.
Or even if it confirms, if it confirms your theory, it's still fun to see how it plays out emotionally on the characters, what their angle is, how long this has been going on, who knows what. So even when, like, I think fans call it and it's not a super twist, I still think the show is pretty good at executing sort of those reveals.
And everything doesn't have to be a super twisty twist. I mean, everything can be pretty straightforward. It's really about that journey, how you get there, and it's straightforward, good storytelling. It's okay if it's like, you know, well, I knew it, but it was so great getting there, like you said. So that's fun sometimes.
And I just like to be right.
And you're
well, you know, the trick seems to be to keep the audience, you know, dangling them along just long enough, you know, until they just about ready to lose their minds, and then don't make the reveal so wrong that they get mad at you. But that seems to be the trick.
We're still losing our minds over that one question, though.
Yeah, I know, over because you and I are right, because...
Yeah. Oh. God.
This is the ongoing.
What's the ongoing question?
Is Lizzie Red's daughter?
And Berlin,
I haven't heard that one before.
Well, I've never heard that one before.
You haven't heard that before? Let me tell you about it.
Amanda, what do you think of the episode?
I think
you ought to.
Let him speak to him.
As far as I know, of the cast, there is only one person who actually knows the answer to that, and that's James.
Oh.
No one else knows. Megan may have some clues as to some other things, but she doesn't know herself. We are so, all in the dark.
Everybody except Spader knows.
Spader knows?
Nothing.
Yeah, because he's
got
to play.
He's
played
to,
a character.
Right?
He's
okay,
got to play the long game.
He's
got to
play James. He's got to play the long game.
So let's just say
and James isn't now a producer.
But he doesn't keep
a producer, so he's now heavily involved.
Oh, that's true.
Guys,
yeah.
We're talking over each other here for a second. But just to be clear, so if she is not his daughter, he at least has it in his mind. Spader has it in his mind, the backstory, enough of it to really play the character.
You would have to ask him.
Okay.
But as I understand it, he knows the angle that he's playing or not playing, or the truth that he's playing of his relationship with her and his relationship with the FBI task force.
Wow.
Right.
There's a reason he turned himself in to the FBI last season. And only that actor knows. And of course our showrunners, and I'm sure most of our writers.
Right.
Okay.
I want to unpack that in a second, but before I get that, I want to just your quick impressions of the episode, Nate. I don't want to leave you because you're on the couch. I don't like one of the show can't go on without you. You know? What did you think?
I loved it. I loved the beginning. I loved seeing that little side of Samar. So I don't know why I'm looking at you when I'm saying that, obviously, because of the character. Because obviously it's kind of like her last week penile dysfunction.
Huh?
At her wrong.
I don't know why she looked at me on that line. But, you know, it's actually funny.
Well.
Mojan texted me. She's like, I have a funny idea for that scene. And I literally text her back, erectile dysfunction. And she goes, oh my God, same brain. I was like, same brain. We knew we were going to come in and do something with that. Just because, you know, a lot of that was exposition and stuff. So exposition for the story. So anytime you can find character and nuance and relationship in that, it just makes it more fun and so forth. And
but
there's no directive to it. So we just kind of sort of playing with that. And what it means to her and what it means to me.
We love those moments. Those moments are great. But seeing a different side of her in the, well, you know, it's different as far
as
her out there,
for her, right? I know,
great
it was
episode
a big
for
one.
Her. Really interesting. Again, I'm sure we'll talk about the Blacklister number being really high up because we all thought that was a very interesting jump because it's been like up in the like upper two digits, lower three digit numbers for a while. And then also, you know, it's kind of like Christmas as far as certain questions being answered. I mean, we see more Tom. You know, it was almost like the scimitar was a gift to Samar. Really? And even the whole Zoe thing, the whole reveal at the end, that was like a gift. It's funny how, you know, it's like Red's giving out gifts this week.
Yeah, but nothing is for free.
That's true.
Right? Oh. I was actually thinking about that on the drive over here. I was like, why did he sort of gift that to her? And I think, 'cause then she owes him one, you know, and the more favor he can curry, this is my theory. This is not writer or me speaking. This is me just as a fan of the show. As soon as you give someone and then they're beholden to you in any way, or grateful for you in any way or so forth, then that can come back later, even if it's emotional currency and even if it's just, trust so that he can, you know, he can further manipulate or, you know, navigate or chess piece, the team.
Yeah, especially if you can get them to do something illegal, then you really own them. Then you got them.
Right.
So, you know, it's
also, I mean, if she did kill the scimitar, which is implied, but we didn't see, you know, the only one who would know that
is Red.
Yeah.
Right.
So he knows, he's starting to know things on different task force members that only he knows.
We as an audience don't quite know the extent of the reason that Navabi is there. We know that Red put her there and that they have something going on about that, but we don't know why. So whatever their relationship is, it's definitely separate from what's happening.
We got a piece of that. We got a hint of that today when she showed up with Lizzie, like, you know, in the know, like, well, they're here. We know that Red sort of used her as part of this long game to get access to Scimitar and all those other things, but now we don't know if that's the only reason she's there, if that's just one of many reasons.
But it did close up one hole, or sort of one loop of that, is that when she was introduced in the beginning of this season, she was tracking Red because he had something to do with the dust-up that had killed her brother.
Right.
So she was... So last night, that kind of came full circle. Red helped close that loop, the guy that she was looking
for.
So not only did he, like, redeem himself and prove, or if he did prove, he helped get the person that she was actually after. He just knew that she was involved somehow. So,
however, I want to get to this later, too, you know, the scimitar did bring up some questions about the, you know, her brother.
Absolutely. And sort of like involvement.
Who, his involvement, yeah. who he is. I wonder if that is, was that.
There's something more there.
That
yeah.
can't be, I don't feel like that was a throwaway.
No, that's not done.
Like
no.
That's actually, maybe that's more the reason why she's there. I mean, that has something to do with Red's, you know, motivation for bringing her in is the true nature of her brother's, sure. you know,
person. She killed three people, or maybe three people last night, possibly off the roof in the uh-huh. beginning, the scimitar, possibly.
Yep.
And also, warehouse. And in the warehouse, exactly.
Yeah.
She had a.
She's dropping.
She's not messing around. She hung up on me.
Man.
And she, oh my God. That's strong.
Biggest crime of all.
Worst she thing she did.
I was like helping her. I was like locating people. She's getting right? the phone.
It was very abrupt. It was very rude.
Her heart was broken.
Oh. If you only knew what she really did. I mean, Aram is naive to Tom. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know that she's killed. And all these people, like, it's yeah. it's nice. It's
I think
nice
that's why your character is so loved, because he is the oh, only man. Guy that is like kind of like pure, like the driven snow. Like everybody else is like getting dirtier and dirtier, but Aram's like, I'm just the nicest guy in the world.
He's yeah. still reeling from the fact that he had to kill a guy from last season.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
I'm still dealing with that.
It's like, have you guys done that? No, not today. I mean, in general. I mean, it's cool.
Well, let's just get into the episode itself. Let's just jump right in. And the Scimitar, the Blacklister number 22, which I thought and felt kind of high to me. You know, but I don't know. We don't know what he does or does. We know he's half hitman, half con man. Up mm-hmm. that line.
Well, we figured we had a cult that was we have a whole bunch full of people and they're rated higher.
We had a whole bank.
Yeah,
the whole cartel, the Mombasa cartel.
Yeah,
what, number 114 or something like that.
Guys, and this know is your numbers. That's yeah. so fun.
Yeah. Well, that's what we wanted to ask you. Is there a rhyme or reason to the numbers?
I imagine there is. I don't know what it is, though.
Okay.
I imagine. It's fun to kind of think about and be like, and it stands out when all of a sudden the number is quite high or
yeah.
under 100 or something.
Well, we kind of know, too, as we get closer and closer to these finales, you know, we're the almost at the fall finale, the penultimate of the fall finale, mm-hmm. like the number
the
gets high.
The mid-season almost finale, yes. finale show.
The number's got to get kind of high. At this point, if we get to the fall finale, it's like number 200. I'm like, hey.
Wait a minute. You guys will be shooting awesome.
The Scimitar, so this episode opens, as we talked about, we already talked about a lot, but I really want to unpack into this Samar sort of seduction / mission she was on Dubai at the beginning, because I'm joining Aram here. She was so hot in that opening episode, that the shot in her was like a whole new side of her, which I was very, very happy to see. I'm not gonna lie,
they give me crap all the time just for saying I like Tom's beard. But here you go.
It was really cool.
If Samar had a beard, that guy had a beard too.
Yeah,
I probably liked him too.
I think he looked a little bit like Aram, and that's why she was able to.
Oh, there you go. That's what
nice. She's gonna help her do that mission.
She's superimposing your
face. Really the character. So we see that. We see her on the side mission, you know, which is weird because we forget that she's sort of double dipping for the task force, but she's still a full blown Mossad agent, you know, doing her thing. So that was kind of cool to see. Mm-hmm. And then we come back and we find out that this is a larger mission that now has to be. I mean, when we find out that happened, then we find out that what? Because this is where I get confused in the whole Scimitar.
Okay, the man that she murdered but made it look like a suicide, right? Like she said, mm-hmm. rest through him out the window.
Yeah.
So he was one of Iran's top scientists.
The top nuclear scientist. Yes, that's important.
Yes, absolutely.
I think he was going to pick up some plutonium or something.
Yeah,
that's right. He was there. His flux capacitor.
Anyone sure. here have any plutonium? Is there yeah. anybody? You guys.
Picking up some stuff.
Guys, right the Iranians have a DeLorean. Be careful. Be careful.
So now the Iranian government has employed the Scimitar to retaliate and in turn kidnap and probably kill and got do God knows what to America's top nuclear scientist.
But not before bringing this country to its knees.
Not before bringing this country to its knees, right. Yes.
That's important.
Got it.
Am I correct?
Well, we are the great state.
Is that the basic? That
it was yes. twofold, to retaliate and get a tit for tat, as well as steal nuclear
information.
Nuclear
information.
Secrets.
We need info.
After you help absolutely. Build us a weapon, right?
You think
right.
building these things is easy. They're not easy.
Two right. plus one stone.
No, absolutely. Right. But I do kind of find the idea, and maybe this is ignorant of me, but I it's such a stretch to me that we have a top nuclear scientist. I mean, Oppenheimer, yeah, I mean, clearly we did at one point, but I can't.
Well, there were, according to the episode,
right.
Not according to actually defense, I'm not 100% sure. According to the episode, there were three.
Yes.
Right.
And we hide them in plain sight.
They're in a sort of witness protection.
like, but hiding in plain clothes, like among us. Right. And by doing any alert systems, that draws attention to who they are, and we don't want to do that. So they were only able to lock down two of them, and for some reason they couldn't lock down this girl, Amelia Collins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She was unable to be secured, and she was giving
a lecture, right? It was a symposium of some sort.
Yeah, on physics of some sort. Mm-hmm. I know. Aram took notice.
So
he would have liked to have gone, I'm sure.
So much to learn.
He wanted to get the t-shirt at least.
Yeah. He actually put in for one. Yeah.
Which we see, because I wanted to get through the through line on that time, which we see, because then we get the tip, the lead, which comes through the camera, the surveillance camera. How do they get the lead?
Well, Aram got the lead.
Aram gets
this guy.
We should pay attention to the episode.
Yeah.
I should. I'm not gonna lie. I was thoroughly confused on. I was so tied up in the plot points and so the unpacking of all these mysteries and all this happening.
There was a camera that was placed.
I got lost in the actual like the scimitar. I'm like, wait a minute, what? I only really watched it once. I need help. I'm asking for
help. Well, thank goodness we have a star of the show here to break us down for you.
Okay. So what happened?
You
talked all that.
Josh,
there
was a camera that was taking pictures of these guys that were coming out of
video.
Yes. And Aram gets the camera and breaks down. And this is Iranian technology, right?
There was a camera surveilling that they found hidden under a thing. And the reason they drew attention was because of Iranian technology. It was a sweep, and it was sitting right in front of a defense building. And then when we pulled that camera, my character retraces back. There was no onboard memory. That actually line was cut, that it was the live relay. And from that live relay, we find out that their home base was this trailer. And then they go to the trailer, but the scimitar and his people are already gone. But they find photos of John Reese, who was a Defense Department security specialist, who was in charge of securing this witness protection. Well, actually, so it seems at that moment.
Don't you remember
episode.
That? It was a full dossier, and there were maps.
I got it. Thank God you're here.
You should come back.
No, there's a lot of little, like, I know. And we shoot we shoot out of order, and sometimes it's like, wait, when do we know what at this moment in the, you know, it's like a little, I have like a little, I'm very Aram-like thing, a little map that I keep when we know what, when am I supposed to,
So I love that the onboard memory thing, that line was cut, that's actually, that helps too.
Because Joe would have understood the whole scene if that line was still in there.
Oh,
it's funny, the tiny little lines they cut, I actually think they're for time. Sort of pace, and you also don't want to give too much information away. I think there's, not to confuse the audience, but I'm just learning this from watching it, that they sometimes things aren't always what they seem or what they clear, but we usually go over like 5 or 10 minutes, and they're always having to cut, and they're taking the fat out of this and beats out of here and beats out of there, so the scenes don't always look like the way we play them, which is always jarring at first when I see that, but then like I take a step back and I was like, I think that's actually probably cooler,
right?
You know, it adds to, you know, with the score and everything, it adds to sort of an adrenaline to the scenes.
It's dense. I'm sure it's very dense. A lot of information to get in there. A lot of characters. A lot of places. I mean, like even just the stuff at the task force alone. There's so much going on and so much exposition that has to be explained to sort of understand what the base of the Blacklister is doing and where they're going. And then you have all the story on top of that. Then you have the running sort of like serialized story on top of that. Yeah. So it's a lot. It's a lot to get done. And the show does a great job of it. It's one of the things we love about it. So that mixture.
That's
so
true.
From there, so then we find out this whole thing is a big ruse. Right? This is a whole big thing. So
like, it was all a plan.
It was all a plan.
Because don't forget, the Scimitar is a hitman, but he's also a con man.
He's a
he's conned the task force there.
Which is great with this. So the elaborate sort of a kidnapping scene, which is all bogus, which was pretty tough to pull off. They're gonna flip the truck, you know, and make sure everyone's alive. They got that done, and they go to this hospital, which we thought was fake. And Nanda, you said you knew it was fake from the beginning.
It looked incredibly fake.
Did you really? Right away, you were like, "Something's wrong with
this
hospital."
Something's wrong with this hospital.
Really?
Yeah,
But you weren't sure what.
I wasn't sure what. And then, saw the phone with the makeup from the Scimitar's cover-up makeup.
Yeah.
Then it was like, okay.
But that's also right in that next scene. They revealed that the Scimitar was the doctor.
Yeah, right. In that
from
next
the
scene.
Makeup, that was it. So did I'm you figure it out off. When? They
I had a feeling. I had a feeling. I wouldn't say, you know, back, you know,
so
hindsight 2020.
I know, but I think that's good when you like suspect, but you can't put your finger on it.
Well, I was wondering either they did a really bad job with that hospital set, or they meant to make it look just bad enough that
they're
you
smart.
Think
they're smart.
That you think there's something slightly off about.
I think it's the latter.
Yeah,
the production design is really good. Did you
think anything was wrong there, Joe?
I didn't. No.
No? You thought they're in Bethesda?
No, but it didn't look like a proper hospital, so I did kind of wonder if the budget got cut. I wouldn't have got it.
On the number one show on NBC.
Right?
We spent too much on commercials. Right? We're going to have to cut the hospital.
I'm like, I know all they
got
to do is rent
I got this
hospital,
guy, Maury. He's got a room. He's got a rehearsal space in Chelsea.
We're going to go. Everybody's coming. We'll light it there. It's going to be beautiful.
It'll be fine.
I thought that was really cool. I'd love to see Lizzie sort of really solve that. I mean, we sort of see her solve the reveal that she had when she sort of said, when something's off, and then the lifting of the scissors, and then the whole escape, and then figuring out the whole thing. That was very
excellent. I know.
Very well done.
I was excited for Megan.
Yeah, it was very well done on Megan's part, like in terms of
totally
being able to play that out and make it believable, because it wasn't a big, you know, I'm going to get out of here by using a bunch of karate
and
shoot my way out.
And can I just say, for me, in that scene, too, what freaked me out, well, first of all, you know, any Latino with a beard can also be, you know, Iranian, I guess, you know? So, Rivera, I mean, no, he looked Latin, but he wasn't, he was the scimitar. But also just the fact that all these people, you know, they had this whole setup in a hospital. They had these people who were Caucasian working there, and they all are really under the premise of the Iranian government.
It goes even further. They set up that, well, they planted the camera. They planted John Reese, the white guy.
Yeah.
He worked for them. They had they had employed Americans or people to play Americans.
Sure.
So they built the entire hospital, the staff, the equipment and everything, the hospital, so forth. They had those guys chase them, flip over the car, make them think, shoot them, but shoot the tires out so they don't kill them. I mean, the whole thing was a con.
Yeah.
It was a con from the beginning. And I remember actually reading the episode, and when me and Harry Cooper were walking down the scene, and we had to recap it. I remember being really frustrated.
That's all right.
There's water on the table.
He does that every week. I
was afraid I was going to do that, I'm glad you did it first.
All of my scotch, if you're listening on iTunes, I just spilled.
We're actually going to have a sponsored section of this podcast when Joe drops it. That drop was sponsored by Kleenex.
Thanks, Josh.
So,
Save your phone.
Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. Those are doers, Josh.
Braswell was very excited.
What was the last thing I was saying?
You were talking about the whole
con experience
right now.
So who what?
You're getting the full experience right
good
now.
Good. I love it.
How elaborate the con was. From
I remember when me and Harry were talking doing that scene, how frustrating it was because it was the first time that I am aware that Aram was fully duped as well. I mean, we were all duped.
That's because they gave you just enough to draw you in.
Yeah, and then I think that line might have been cut too. I can't remember. But I was really, I don't know if it showed or it came out because those lines were, you know, the episodes, you know, chopping forward. I was very upset that I led them to the, you know, I think I solved this hill camera thing.
Right.
I had this smart moment. But what I did is I actually just was part of feeding them into the trap. I fell for the trap and led my team members into the trap that they... So Aram was upset.
Yeah.
Aram was very, very upset about that whole situation.
He's
not to mention
right
he was missing
his
friends.
Every episode up until now, man.
Now he's 9 for 10.
Nine for 10.
He doesn't like it.
All right.
He's upset. He's upset. Even if he triangulates something and it's not like on the spot, like I remember there was a couple episodes ago, I got it within a 50-yard radius because it didn't.
Right.
I was like, Aram was beating himself.
I remember.
Up.
I love it.
You do?
Yeah, it was the hospital one.
Yeah,
wasn't
no.
It?
Yeah.
The was it the one where they go to the doctor who's doing the transplants?
On the children. Yeah.
I told you. I pay attention.
Yes,
I pay attention to the young
yes,
people.
Yes, Joe. Yes.
At least one Joe pays attention.
Yeah, the other one's barely conscious.
Then he continues because he also he meaning the scimitar because he's partially successful. They go and they get the doctor, but then they're able to sort of penetrate the security. And they're almost
because
16.
The phone call because they triggered the reaction that they wanted. The whole thing was to trigger that reaction
to get that phone call,
in a hospital. That entire episode.
That was incredible.
Right?
It was incredible. Yeah.
I love the sting. I love good con men grifters and all this stuff. I love a good con.
I know.
And so it's very, very satisfying to
Me
see
too.
A good con come together. Yeah. It was busted up at the end. I just love an elaborate con coming together like that. So it almost worked. If it wasn't for those pesky kids and their dumb dog. it almost worked.
I've actually played Scooby-Doo before. That's actually
have
a true
you really?
Story. Uh-huh. I am one of five Warner Brother approved Scooby voices.
Yeah, really?
When I graduated from college, I went on tour with Scooby-Doo Live.
Oh,
and they needed somebody to play. Oh, yes. True story.
That is awesome.
Oh, man. That's fantastic.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
That is that's amazing.
I did radio interviews all over the when we were touring all over the country as Scooby Doo.
Oh no.
Yeah, so I took in calls and so forth. You know, you have to pay your dues
now,
before you can get
because
a
you're
job
one of
the best.
But that job was great too. At
did
the
they
time,
pay
that
you
job
Scooby
was good. I gotta ask you about that. So because you're one of five approved Scooby Doo voices. How do you like that geek, Joe? Jonah's voiceover.
I do mostly voiceover, but that's a hell of a gig. That's a great. There's only five guys we can call.
When you're doing those radio interviews, do you have is there like a set amount of language that Scooby can say, and can you just freelance on what he can say?
This is so long ago. This is like already 14 years ago. But first of all, there's only so much you could physically do with that voice.
He does not have a huge vocabulary.
He does not. He so forth, and so you riff on it a little bit. But there was, I think. There's like five or six. If you look at the cartoons, he only says certain things. But right. His big thing is he'll just repeat one word that Shaggy will say a sentence, and Scooby will repeat like the one funny key word right. from that. Mm. So there was a guy playing Shaggy, and he would do Shaggy, and then I would like chime in or something. I'd say, "Everbuzz, so happy to be here."
I love it.
What am I doing on After Buzz TV?
I'm
going to lose my job.
No,
laugh.
You're fine. No, right now. The laugh is...
That's the best promo we've ever had.
That's awesome. That's for my man Troop.
The
here.
Subtle napkin yeah. handle.
Well, you know, we will switch cameras to me. Camera me.
Thanks.
Nothing's happening on the other side of the room. The gang's broke. The con is broken up, and they almost get away. They do get away. Actually, I'm sorry, he does get away because Lizzie does find them, pulls the gun, recognizes the tattoo.
He gets away, but he doesn't get the doctor.
Right, yes. Doesn't get the doctor.
The doctor's in the luggage.
He just escapes. He doesn't complete the task.
So as far as Lizzie's concerned,
yes.
The case is they haven't gotten their person, but the case has been solved because they protected all three of the scientists, yep. The two that were already taken care of, and they got Amelia Collins. So yep.
They got her out of the suitcase. That actress actually got in a suitcase.
Oh, really, wow.
Really?
Yeah, Nareet. Yeah, she actually. Got in the suitcase.
Oh, wow.
I would imagine that was part of the casting. Like, must fit in oversized luggage.
But, you know, I wasn't there when they filmed that scene that day, but I'd heard that the actress got in the suitcase, so I was ready to see, like, some huge suitcase. It was a little suitcase.
Yeah.
She got in the suitcase.
That's crazy.
You know, I'm going to digress, but James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy, I know him. I used to work on a show that he used to come on all the time. He had a girlfriend. I don't know if he's still dating her, but he had a girlfriend who used to be able to fit into suitcases. He had photos of her fitting into suitcases.
That's not a cool
she
thing.
Was like really into fitting into really.
God, he shouldn't tell
like,
people that.
That sounds horrible. Horrible.
Oh,
that
he was proud of it.
That makes James Gunn sound like a horrible person.
He was no. She people have their things. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I said too much. Cut my mic off.
It is photos.
I just thought that.
Speaking of suitcases, James Gunn and his girlfriend
just reminded me.
Wow. Okay. Well, whatever you're into, guys.
So we find out the end.
Scooby-Doo, suitcases. Which one of you guys are going to reveal too much information?
No, that's not it. We get to the. He almost gets away. Red's there waiting for him with Dembe, and so that all thing happens. He hands her over as a gift to our girl Samar, which he gives him some information about her brother that may or may not come back later, and then Samar may or may not have. But I guess it's assumed and it's implied that she kills him. The body, I'm going to say, I'm not so sure he's dead. I'm going to say it.
Well, so sure he's dead?
Yeah.
The scimitar?
No,
the scimitar
he's dead.
He's dead.
His body he washed up on the shore where the whole group of people there was flashing lights.
There was a bullet in his head, too.
Oh, really?
There was a part of his face missing. You didn't see the...
And let's not forget
in the head. She shot him in the head.
Oh, I missed... Okay, I missed it.
What show did you watch?
I don't know.
We watched The Blacklist.
And don't forget, also, after that, they had a nice little close-up of Samar with her frow all, furrowed and everything. Like,
that's
she
right.
was really
well,
stressed
Liz,
out.
Liz looked at her and goes, who would do this? And she looks right at her partner, Samar.
Oh.
Don't you remember that moment? That was awesome.
That was an awesome moment.
Yeah, she goes, who would do such a thing? Like, they weren't expecting that. They got all the people, and they thought...
Yeah, who would do such a thing?
They had that
who
nice little close-up of her. So,
shoot somebody
obviously.
In the head or kidnap a former ex-husband and keep him tied up.
And don't forget, Red set that up.
Yeah, Red set that up.
And she did promise to kill him. She said to his face. She said,
I'm
will
going
kill
to
you.
Kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So
I should go back to New York. I should go back to New York.
He challenged
you should.
Her.
You did better in New York. No, that's it. But it's like a half a second on the screen.
Okay.
If something's going on and you're like thinking about something, I have to rewind things all the time.
It's inexcusable.
There's a lot to think about.
Okay. So he's dead.
So he's dead.
He's dead. Okay.
Although in your predictions, you could say he's alive. That's all right, entirely
possible. You can say that. Let's just scratch off my prediction.
You're going to win.
Okay, so let's move over. I want to talk about, I mean, I need you to talk about, because we're burying the lead here, the whole Tom and Lizzie situation, because Tom is in the basement, as was revealed last week. In the boat. I'm sorry, not in the boat. But
in the boat.
In the boat.
He's
we talked about
boat.
It briefly. You know, is Lizzie torturing him? Is it presumed that?
He doesn't look tortured.
I know, but he's coughing up information. Was she just tossing him a blanket and his coffee's just spilling his guts for a blankie?
He's cold.
I think she's making things extremely uncomfortable for him.
But he's like a super spy. He's just spilling
still
his guts.
Chained up on a boat.
All right.
Cold boat.
Well, tell me that
so
this
beard should keep him warm.
A super spy, but how many episodes is it, and how much time off was there in the hiatus?
True.
He's been her prisoner.
He's been kicking it there
a long time.
It's not like a week. It's like a long time.
So she's really
don't forget
the long
he was.
Game.
We don't know what happened to. Maybe we will.
He didn't
at
even know
point,
what month it was.
He was shot too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Who knows what. Kind of care he's had. I mean,
point.
When did the season end?
Maybe he couldn't talk for a while. This is conjecture, but maybe
right,
he couldn't talk for a while.
No,
but it's not just like, here's a blanket. You've been around for a week.
Right.
He's been her prisoner for a long time, and he clearly doesn't know what her end game is. He's trying to manipulate her, but she's got the.
But he can only manipulate so much when he's being deprived of
right.
Well,
needs.
That's,
yes.
Well, that's my thing too. I feel like it's sort of a dual purpose thing. I feel like that. I guess what I'm getting at is maybe I feel like just that Tom is actually trying to get information from Lizzie as well. I feel that there's a dual manipulation going on because I don't know.
Still,
maybe I don't know. I could be wrong.
Well, I would imagine here. You know, you got your spies. So I mean, it's got to become. We were talking about last week or 2 weeks ago whether Navari might be manipulating you, and we kind of figured she probably is because
Navari might be manipulating
a Rom because I mean she's a spy. This has got to be second nature, right? At some point or another, even if you have real affection, you're probably going. I know, but it's truth. You know, you're probably going to be doing some manipulating and getting what you need. And you know, her first loyalty is going to be to Israel. So I mean, it makes sense to me that she would. But you know, with Tom, of course, he's going to be manipulating Liz, and she's going to be manipulating him. But I mean, at the end of the day, these are super operatives. He's gotten away from whatever government, if he ever worked for a government at any point. And at this point, he only cares about himself.
Sure.
He's got no loyalty to Berlin or anybody else.
Right.
So at this point, he's just going to do what he can to survive, to stay alive as long as he can.
Holding on? I mean, he's still holding back information.
Because as soon as he's given her everything she needs, she's got no reason to keep him alive except for emotion.
Right. Fair enough.
So he's got to drag out and see if he can ignite any emotion at all. So the happy anniversary thing, he might have been holding out for November to wish her happy anniversary.
Fair enough. Do you have any thoughts on Mando, any thoughts on the Lizzie Tom reveal from last week? I know you had a lot of thoughts last week, but any thoughts on continuation?
Well, I just think, obviously, it's a little bit of a chess match right now between the two. I mean, Tom is, you know, it was really interesting that end scene when he said, I know you're going to kill me. I know when you're done with me, you're just going to get rid of me. But I really don't believe he believes that. It's just a ruse with her. I really feel
that
he does it. That's
like.
Why he does the whole whatever you decide to do, just look me in the eye.
Yeah. And he's throwing in the personal, you know, it's November, it's our
anniversary.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really interesting scene for Tom, for Eggled, because, you know, I think it's just really, really masterfully played, because he's a prisoner, but really, I don't think he is that much of a prisoner.
He's still
pushing her buttons. It was interesting you guys talking about how is he being tortured, because based on what we're seeing, it really doesn't seem like he is, again, that weak
right
in that position. But he wants to get the hell out of there. So, but he doesn't
I think
feel
the
like
torture is a deprivation of information. He doesn't know what's going on, what she's doing. He's locked up there. He just literally does not know if and when he's getting out, you know, if at all, if she's going to kill him. He knows that she's already broken so many FBI rules, and she's so different than she was last year.
Right.
Maybe he's a little scared. Maybe he thinks he can one-up her. But he's such a smart character that I think he's, in every little interaction he can, whether it's push a button or not, he's trying to extract information.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And keep
himself alive.
And keep himself alive.
By ferreting that information out as
little as
possible.
And he knows her so well.
Yeah,
like, so well. I don't know if he believes she could keep this up all that much longer. So that's why he's throwing things like, if you kill me, we'll be linked forever. Happy anniversary. You know, this isn't in her truest
nature. Let me throw this out there,
totally.
Let me throw this out there, because I wanted to go on this rant last week over the pills. with wrestler. Oh, and we didn't really talk about it. I don't think we're going to talk about it on the rundown that much. Even the moment when he said and he was sedated in the church in the hospital, that was like the best he felt like in a while.
I love that line. I love that line.
Yeah,
so honest and smart.
I really did not like the whole pill storyline because I felt, especially at a time when Tom was not in the picture.
You're wrong about it.
No. Let's get off the thing right now. But I'm just trying to get into the rant. I really didn't like the whole storyline because at a time when Tom's out of the picture, and we all thought there could be some connection between Wrestler and Lizzie, I feel like the writers used the pills as an excuse for Wrestler to be so caught up in his own grief and drama and, you know, just being so detached that there was no chemistry. But I noticed what was interesting this episode was the chemistry also seemed to be there a little bit for Wrestler and for Lizzie. They seemed to have that little moment. So I find, it's very interesting. Now that Tom's back in the picture.
You just gave me an idea, and I hadn't thought about this, by saying that the writers, what did you say, the writers did that in order to, like...
Lessen the chemistry between the two of them.
Maybe it's so that it keeps him blind to all her extracurricular activities, aka Tom and the chain up. Maybe with his pill addiction, it's a natural thing to.
It's a great point.
To be, remember that Monarch Douglas? He was a little behind. Yeah. He's been late to work sometimes. Yeah.
Because it wasn't really, because the pills thing wasn't really like this whole thing, like they're going to have a major intervention and he was going to totally mess up a mission. It's just been little things, like being late or being distracted or whatever. And I felt like it didn't really make sense, but I figure it's definitely they're playing a long game with it and it's not a focus of his character, but it definitely seems to be a layer in there.
But you're 100% right. If he was the wrestler from last season who was, you know, by the book, always sharp, always on point, Lizzie would not be getting away with this. You're 100% right.
Yeah, he'd have followed her around. I just got that from just now.
It's a great point, Andy.
I get 10% of whatever you make off that idea.
It's one thing to say that she's hiding this from Red, which is also still a stretch because Red still seems to don't squall it up. But, I mean, wrestler's her partner. Wrestler, the sharp wrestler of last season is her partner. I mean, there's no way he can sort of get all of this extracurricular activity away from Wrestler. So maybe that is a device to let us know that Wrestler's not on his game. And maybe, hopefully, they'll even mention that. Like, if I was 100%, I would have caught this whole thing.
But, one thing I do like about it, I know it's been done on other TV shows, and some people might, think it's cliche on some level. But the reason I do like it, and I like it for Diego and for that character, is he endured... We could argue that Megan's character Liz endured the most last season with Red being into her life and her entire world being turned upside down with Tom. But he had lost his girlfriend, who was going to get married to him. Then they get back together just when he makes that big thing. He finds out she's pregnant, and then she's like shot in the stomach. Right. It's like that is huge event that you can't just brush away. Under the rug,
and then he loses his partner.
He was really close to Malik, Perlmutter's character. So there's the beginning of the episode, in the beginning of the season, you saw that there was Dr. Friedman, that one character who's like, you have to talk to me. He's like, I'm fine. I don't need to talk to anybody. Yeah. And he refuses to talk about it. He doesn't want to. I don't know if that's because he was on his pills then or not, but, there was a line that I improvised that they tried to keep, but I think it got cut for time where I was like, hey, Dr. Friedman.
You're going religiously.
But like it was mandatory, and the idea was that the entire task force had to go.
Right.
And he's not seeing his therapist, so
Aram has not missed a meeting.
You know, when you're doing a long series, you got to play. We all have to play a long game, not just James's, long game that he's intending on all of us. So how do you parcel that out and connect it to things that huge life events that happened to you in the middle of the season, last season? So that's why for me I know pills have been done before, but I really go with it for him.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for the actor that he's get something. It's something more dynamic.
Diego has a sort of chew on, no pun intended. We like the pill storyline, and hopefully.
Yeah, of course you like the pills, right?
Well, we all
like it. Song about it.
Sorry, there was a song. Pills.
There was a song.
I forgot the song.
Thank you for singing that song, by the way.
Can't believe you made me do that.
Let's move on. So the last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll get into a conversation with Amir, is the other lead that we're burying here is the whole Red, Jennifer, Zoe situation. That was a big reveal. I did not see coming at all, and that was fantastic. Very, very well done. I had no idea that that was going to be Berlin's daughter. Then when it happened, it's one of those moments like, of course, because he told Berlin that's not in the thing. We've got to find out who the real person is. But I think that was extremely well done. Mm-hmm. That that
especially
Zoe,
that scene that he drugged her.
Yes,
yeah. That whole dialogue and when he's talking about daughter and she goes sardines or anchovies,
right?
Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's not that simple. You know, I was like, you think he's talking about her, but it could be Megan or it could be someone else. You don't. Yeah. I just thought that whole exchange was like honest and heartfelt.
Yeah.
And intriguing. It was like, I thought that's like the Blacklist on the money.
But I saw him being so nice to her last week. In the past couple of weeks, it looked like a father trying to reconnect with a daughter type of scene,
which is what they wanted.
Which is what they wanted us to think. And then all of a sudden, he drugged her.
And that line she says, it was so good. It was, she goes,
"What have you done?
What have you done?"
Yeah.
Goosebumps. Goosebumps right now.
Good. I gotta say, you know,
we drugged her. I mean, even though he's like, "I'm not gonna hurt you," and we trust Red enough, but it's still creepy.
Yeah,
didn't see it coming.
We said this a bunch of times. I mean, I first of all, you know, James Spader is the newsflash. James Spader is good at acting.
I believe it's
a hot take. Hot take from Joe Braswell.
On a number of occasions, we've said he won.
James Spader is good acting. But it's, there's so much we love about the Blacklist and that character. What James does with Red is these sort of fantastic monologues he's able to do from time to time, usually towards the end of the episode, when he's either explaining something or talking about the past or doing something to sort of really fill in the gaps of who Red is. And they're always fantastic. In this episode, that scene was so great because you get him reacting. Like, you get him reacting. She had most of the talking, most of the monologuing, and he had the reactions. And it was just beautifully done and beautifully acted. And I just want to say again, Spader did it acting. That's it.
He made him say very good.
Maybe he's going to say very good now.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be diplomatic, but I was excited for the whole team in the episode. I thought it was a really exciting episode for Megan.
Yeah.
And Mojan as well.
Yeah.
You know, there was a great thing for Mojan is that the audience kept knowing things that the other characters didn't. Like, that guy fell off the roof and he goes, and Liz turns to her, "Did you do that?" She goes, "You know, I can't comment on a mistake operation."
Right.
And at the end episode, she goes, "Who would do this?" And she doesn't say anything.
Right.
So there was a ton of moments where the audience was in on something and that she couldn't reveal it and so forth. So I always love watching that on actors. And so
give her mad kudos because she made that scene in the hallway so much more interesting than it could have been a totally...
Which scene in the hallway?
When she's seducing the Iranian scientist.
Oh, yeah. It was great, right?
When she's laughing and she just got to show so much more that it could have been such a short scene. It could have been nothing really happening, but she really stretched it out and got to show a bunch of different sides of herself, which I thought was... I was impressed.
Mm. Good.
Yeah, good.
Me too. I think we talked about this, but in the hospital, how Megan played the discovery.
Yeah,
it was like you're putting it together. The audience is putting it together, and she's putting it together. But you can't do it faster than the audience. But you can't be slower than the audience. But something doesn't quite make sense. But her brain's always working. She's always trying to save the asset, save herself, save her partner.
That's a great example of sort of like how maybe something
well directed too.
Yeah, exactly. It's how something appears in the page. I was going to say that. Something appears in the page, and then what the director and then the actor does with that moment of like, because I don't know how it reads in the page, but it's sort of like, oh, discovery. Megan, you know, figures out that she's not in a real hospital.
Yeah.
But, you know, how that's you know discovered and played was great. I really love that. I love that sort of sleuthing.
I think I may have missed it. What were the nail-like thingies in her arm?
Just to give her pain.
Yeah, well, no, it was a, well you know, when you get your arm set, you have a pin straight through.
No, she never broke her arm. That was to give her pain.
Oh, was it to give her pain?
Yeah, to give her pain. That was to give her the sensation of pain when she...
She never broke her arm.
I thought it was
That's why when she took it out...
Part of the con. They made her think her arm was broken in three places, but it actually wasn't. They just put a cast over pins, so she feels a pain.
That was still pretty gross.
That was great, man.
She was able to get all badass-y afterwards.
So now,
but even though you did know that, because when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, that's not so clear," but it's still creepy.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
It was horrifying.
It works on a few levels.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely horrifying. I know, cool. I just didn't get it.
So now, this last thing.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So now we have that very last scene, which was great, which is that sort of, you know, the face-off between Red and Berlin, and then the reveal of the daughter, and then now we have the situation where, I mean, the question that has to be asked, I mean, will we have Berlin and Red working together, these adversaries working together to find who the person is who really wants
them? So set this all up?
Who set this all up? My super blacklister I've been
looking
for.
Next week in the fall finale.
Maybe we'll find out. I have this super blacklister theory, which I've been waiting for, like that someone in that top four is the super blacklister.
Well, there were a lot of questions too with this, because we were talking about it before the show. It's like, obviously, Mary Louise Parker's character was we thought was Jennifer's mom. But we saw Berlin had that scene where he kidnapped her, and there seemed to be no recollection. So
yeah, we had to ask the question, like, well, is
what's
Naomi,
the relationship with all these people?
Right. Naomi Jennifer's mom? Jennifer? But that, she can't be Jennifer's mom because Berlin and Naomi were very much, when Berlin kidnapped her, there was no, like...
Yeah, there was not like, no, oh, you.
Yeah, yeah, oh, it wasn't just like, you know, it's like, well, the old days.
Well, somebody, I can't remember who, somebody on YouTube, on one of them, we said, why are we guessing that Zoe was Jennifer all along? That maybe it's a different person, but that doesn't make sense to me.
And we're like, shut up, YouTube.
Yeah, and then one of our things. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
No,
so right. I don't know. That's a possibility too.
But,
so yeah.
Mary Louise Parker's character said something very interesting in her conversation with Red. She said, "What have you told Lizzie? You know, mm-hmm. not much. I've kept my end of the bargain." So she obviously knows some nature of that relationship.
Right.
But then she did reveal to Lizzie, it's whatever he's doing, he's playing you or something.
Yeah.
So she revealed something, but didn't reveal the thing. And then also she said, I'll never tell you where our daughter is.
Yeah.
Or something. So
well, that's
that to
what
me
threw
implied
us off.
That it's not Liz. And now we know that Zoe is not Jennifer. So is there a third person? And I would also argue that we don't know. Maybe Red had a daughter with somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was married another time.
Yeah.
Or maybe he still is married. We don't know. These are things that are being ferreted out.
It turned out it was a red herring.
And can we confirm that the photo, because I saw it mentioned a few times, but the photo from the stew maker that Red saw at the end of the stew maker was definitely Zoe.
Yeah, he handed that to me.
Yeah.
Remember, he handed that to me in 205, the front. He wanted me to look for it, but then his buddy at the DMV found it instead.
Yes.
Right.
And that photo is the grown-up, because the person we were looking for is the person last night, Zoe.
Yes.
Zoe is the name, right?
Yeah. So that is locked up.
Remember the DMV guy?
Yes.
We were both looking for it at the same time. Mm-hmm. I was busy with the plague and saving them, which is why I didn't get to it.
Otherwise,
why wrong?
Like
I can only
I
do.
I would have figured it out.
I was counting on you.
I can only do.
I was saving the world, so
yeah,
I was
that's
not.
That's why. And, yeah.
Well, I let the DMV take that one down.
Well, I mean, we're one episode away from this fall finale, and I guess I think these first episodes did a great job. I mentioned this before. It seemed like in this premiere of this episode, they did a lot of like sort of they gave us a lot of dense material from the first season and this season, and now it seems like we spend a lot of time sort of unpacking it all and then answering these questions. Yeah, which is fantastic. And it seems like I hate these shows like Lost, which I do love, that sort of just give you question after question after question after question with no answers. Maybe another show called The Leftovers, which is a whole separate thing. But anyway, but this is giving you the questions and it's giving you the answers, and it's very, very satisfying along the way. So I'm very happy that we're getting towards this fall finale. We're getting some answers. Even if they give you more questions, at least we're getting some answers. And I think that's fantastic. So
you're going to get some good ones next week.
I can't wait. Okay. So let's talk to you. I mean,
Like what?
Well, yeah, we have like you what? Here. Predictions.
You're going to get some good ones.
So
all of a sudden, the NBC minder crosses her arms and she looks very serious. Skylar is in the kitchen. Wait a dang minute. Slow your roll.
That's the episode. But let's talk to you, Amir, about you and some stuff. I just want to ask you first of all. It's we're so happy. We mentioned before you're our favorite favorite task force member. So
yeah, we put a lot of love on the show.
It's interesting because last season, you know, there was a bunch of folks, and it feels like there was through Angelo Garrick part one and two, and through Berlin, there was a lot of like people dying and like sort of house cleaning. And so what we see in season two is a very different task force than we saw in season one, meaning there are a lot of people gone and we've kind of streamlined things. You stayed. So, I mean, everyone got wiped out into the Angelo Garrick, and then Berlin got some folks, but you survived. I mean, when did you get the indication that you would sort of be not only around for season two, but maybe you'd have an expanded role? How soon did you find that? And congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. The Angelo Garrick episode, when I got that script, that was episode 8, no, it was 9 and 10 of season 1.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. My first episode was episode 3, and then I came back in 6 and have been in all of them since. So it was 6, and then but I was always just the computer guy.
Yeah.
Just kind of like on the side and so forth. It was when I got that first Angelo Garrick episode that, where I was like, what is going on? Everyone's captured. Yeah. Aram has a gun.
Yeah.
I'm running around doing things not on a computer. That was my first indication that they're doing stuff with me,
right.
and they have plans for me. Professionally, I I knew because I was recurring last season, and I had booked another, I think, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, uh-huh. and the Blacklist, you know, they flipped out. They were like, what do you mean? He's doing, we need him for this thing. And I was like, what? We didn't know. That was only my second or third episode.
Okay.
I was like, oh, it was just a couple of computer scenes. They could have a few computer guys. I didn't know. And they really shifted a whole lot of schedules and made it work just to bring me back when I was really a minor character at the time. That was my first indication professionally. I was like, okay, something's up.
Yeah.
You know, they're responding to me, or, you know, this could lead to more potentially.
Sure.
So I remember telling my agents, I was like, let's not worry. They're like, yeah, but they didn't tell us, and we don't have a guarantee, and you're not a regular. I was like, let's just ride this Blacklist thing out for a little while. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
So... I came back and I saw, and I was still not very, and then I found out when I got onto that, was my second or third episode, the director's like, we need to get you on a recurring contract. You got a few more. You got a big thing coming up and a fourth. And I think the plan was that they always knew there was a mole in the task force.
Uh-huh.
They knew that in the, sort of the bigger storyline. But I guess it could have been a variable of who they revealed it was going to be. And I think they had decided that they had liked me and they were going to build me up to then make me the mole and go out in a blaze of glory.
Right.
And then in the process of that, I don't know who, knock on wood, producers or studio or network said, no, don't kill that guy. I keep him around because he's valuable for the team or something. So
I'll tell you what it was. I think I'm telling, as a viewer, like in that Ansel Garrick, you know, that part one into that arc, you were fantastic. You know, and I think that was really the first time that we as fans really connected with sort of you as personality wise and as an actor. And then so I feel like, you know, hopefully the producers saw what we saw. Is like, we got to keep this guy around, or this guy's not the mole. He's our lovable tech guy.
Well, it'd be hard to make you the mole when really the mole was responsible for that whole episode anyway.
I know.
And yeah, you are.
They set me up. Yeah,
yeah.
So Grace is sort of, Mira was kind of involved with Fowler, but it was actually Gray, his guy who had set me up and so forth.
You also have like.
But what's
a very specific skill set that the task force needs? I got to keep you around. And speaking of that skill set, actually, I can only imagine that the Blacklist employs super duper tech writers. Even if they didn't, I would not be the wiser. But you're the one who gets saddled with what I can only describe as techie mumbo jumbo. And so, what is that like when you get that script? Does that come easy to you? Are you tech savvy, or is it a challenge?
Yeah, it's not fun. I consider it fun. I consider it a puzzle. I think the beauty of playing this part is there is a parallel. The way I approach my work, I think, is similar to the way Aram approaches his work. So I'm approaching these texts, and I want to unpack them and do research on them. And Aram is wanting to do that for the case. So I'm actually learning them now that I've been playing this part for a little while. I'm learning them pretty quick and so forth. And I know how to do the research and what's active and what will be useful. And if there's something I don't know, how to do it. And then, of course, my main scene partner on the show is probably not obvious, is the computer screen.
Right.
So there's, you know, production guys that are in charge of the computer screens and what the camera can see and so forth. So what will get revealed and when. So I'm spending, like, as soon as we do rehearsal, I'm like running over to the computer guys and we're like, okay, so forth. So this is how we would break that code, and this is what we would reveal, and the plane ticket's going to come up. All right, if you have it come up on this line, then I'll type here and so forth. So that is like my main sort of interaction. I'm interacting with those guys as much as I am interacting with Diego and Megan and Mojan and so forth.
Well, I just wanted to full quick follow up on that one. I'm a huge fan. Like, since it seems like the last 14 years since 2000, we've had a whole sort of generation of this sort of hacker, like a dramatic hacker, I'm willing to call him, on screen.
There's a show, Scorpion? I haven't
seen
it
yet. Scorpion's now, but this is new.
Right?
Yeah, but this is new. I mean, 24 did a really good job of, like, creating suspense through just people, you know, Chloe standing at TV, at screens, like, you know, Jack. And so we have a lot of that. And you, there's a lot of that in this, and you are fantastic at it, because it's really,
so
I would imagine
you,
as an actor, it must be really hard to sort of be looking at a blank screen or a screen and then sort of be hacking and then delivering lines and then creating tension and all those things. So I think, you know.
Thank you so much.
That's good to get that insight.
I work hard on it.
Yeah.
I do. You know, I work with those guys that I said, and there, we have, like, I've requested, like, I work off an iPad, a laptop,
sometimes
my phone, the big monitors, so forth. And then you have to meet the demands of the camera and so forth. They need to move the monitor here. I was like, oh, well, then how can I make the scene as dynamic and as truthful as possible? So they make fun of me. Sometimes I like to be my own stand-in while they're lighting, because I am literally playing with my desk and being like, how would I solve this case? What can we do? What will actually help the scene move? Like, I'm sort of obsessed with it, like almost neurotically. Well, and it's kind of like the way Aram is with the case. So I just enjoy it, you know.
It's true. We never watch you and get the feeling like you're doing like the old school, like, done. You don't ever have the generic, like, I just typed out 47 things and you all don't even know. It never feels like that. You actually feel like you're kind of moving things around. Is that close to you personally? Are you tech savvy? Are you within 100 feet of Aram?
The question is, do you believe me?
Do you buy it?
I'm okay. I'm okay at a computer.
You can hold your own.
Somebody asked me this once before. Like, remember last year when I had to transfer $5 million to prove to Red that I wasn't the mole?
Yes.
That was that sort of big scene. If I actually could do that, I wouldn't need to be an actor or be on the blacklist.
Yes. Fair point.
Maybe that some of those cases are a little bit above my technical pay grade.
But do people, when they see you and they recognize you, do they kind of like, you know, when they see a doctor on TV, they're like, hey, so I have this little problem over here. Do they start talking to you about tech, or they just
like the IT guy? Like, yeah. Well, I can't read the same. Can't open this email.
Some IT guys will come up to me like, love the show. Love your role on the show. Thanks. I'm an IT guy. And they're looking, I don't know if they're challenging me.
Or is it do they give you the nod?
And like, then it's like, usually it's like, I don't know what it means. I don't know if it's like not good enough or way to represent. It's okay.
It's somewhere in between, bro.
They're a proud bunch, the IT guys, the techie guys. It's true. But thank you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, and
there's one thing you asked me before that I do want to say. In my first episode, Wu Jing, there was a line that I improvised right when Mira and Diego ran out the door. And when I improvised that, because the director at the time was like, you're great, you know, make this your own, make it your own, have fun.
Yeah.
And I knew that I said the line after they had left the scene. So they could cut it out if they wanted to. And I was just kind of having fun with myself. I remember only wanting to do the job if I was like, if I'm going to have fun with this, I'm going to make the role fun. Right. Otherwise, it's just a computer guy. I didn't know where it was going to go, but it's a lesson. You know, always say yes and be ready and, you know. And when I did that, they kept that improv in the script. And I actually just went to the – I actually met a lot of the writers for the first time yesterday, because the writers' room is in L.A. And they all said, they're like, that line, we rewound it and watched it. They're like, oh, my God, who's this guy? And that's – so a lot of the humor comes from that. So so it's the first time in my life that I don't feel like I, like, auditioned and I'm playing a role. It feels like a role has been kind of, like, shaped with me. So it kind of feels like I helped create a role that it happens to be on that just happens to be on the blacklist.
Well, that was
it's really a dream kind of experience. It's kind of amazing. Yeah. Synergistically, I don't know if I use that word right.
No, but I think so. It's working well. I mean, that was what I was going to ask you, because we talked about the task force and what, you know, so much exposition, so much has to be done technically in there. It seems like there's very little room to be able to, you know, have character come out and have.
He said that at my audition, and he then became a producing director. He said at my audition, he goes, "Yo, thank you. You know, you're the only one who made any of that techno mumbo jumbo speak clear and fun and interesting, and I believe you," or something. He said something like that, and I was like, oh.
Well, that's those little muscles.
That's literally why I have the job.
Well, that's fantastic. So it's those moments that in between the sort of the all the crisis, those moments of levity that you find in there is what makes the character so great. And you answered it there. I was going to ask you how much of that is, you sort of, are you able to put in there? How much of that is in the script? And how, you know, are you building out?
Beautiful is that a lot of it is in the script. A lot of it is in the script now. With certain directors, most of them now, they do allow me to improvise a little bit here and there, like, you know, at the tag of something, not in the middle of a scene or so forth. It's just a little bit, not much. But it's interesting to see what jokes stay and what jokes go.
Right.
Some of the best jokes that, like, crack up the crew and crack us all up don't make it into the episode, because I think it's probably the tone.
It's a tonal, thing.
And there's a lot of the throwaway jokes or the jokes that were, or tiny moments that were, then stay and carry more.
We're not going to mess with the pace so much.
Is it harder to? I mean, obviously, you're just throwing some nice little jokes that seem to work, you know, with the character, or whatever. But is it harder sometimes to improv when there's so much about what's coming up that you still don't know? Kind of like the whole question that James Bader knows about the relationship. Is it possible that, you know, you kind of like at times?
Great question. The beautiful thing about Aram is he's really in the present.
He
as much as I know, he's not. he's trying to solve cases, and he's well versed on the blacklist up until this moment, and where he is in the present moment.
So you're just playing your truth at that moment. So that's brilliant. That's awesome.
In a way, that's kind of nice, right? You don't have the whole overarching thing in the back of your head that could actually screw up your performance. You're
unless they're planning on making me some Kaiser Soze character. If they do, people would be like, "You're too nice. I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Your character's too nice." But if that's the case, I just hope it's like season,
I think we
like,
talked about that.
That's our 24 conditioning, that everybody's a mole. Like, if we watch
Nina Myers, I know. Yeah. That was the best reveal ever.
Nina Myers, yeah.
That was the best. But she was only on two seasons. Yeah. I would much rather be Chloe O'Brien and be on for the run of the show.
Exactly. No, you are.
Stay alive.
Stay alive. That's a super duel. Aram versus Chloe O'Brien.
I think that'd be an awesome duel.
I feel like he needs to, like, go out with Chloe O'Brien.
If
it doesn't work out with Samar Nawabi.
Yeah. Well, he's got to do some more field work, because Chloe's got him on field work. That's the only thing.
That's true.
Yeah. And she's got him on the comms. Because we haven't seen you on comms or anything, on any of those little top secret things yet, hopefully.
That's true. Although he does, like, call Megan. He does do top secret things with Megan sometimes.
That's true. He does do that.
Yeah.
We hope that we get to see Aram maybe in the field at some point more. Because you're cooped up in the task force.
I've been waiting for this. I've been hoping that, like, there's a scene where we go out and he has to shoot again. And everyone's going to be like, oh, no. And I just go, like, poof. And then, like, Diego looks at me and I go, I've been practicing.
I want that
so bad, you know.
Please write his room. I'm listening.
I went to the meetings with the shrink. I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm good.
I can shoot as many people as I want to. I'm in good shape.
I actually want to learn a little bit more about just you and your journey that brought you to the blacklist, and doing a little bit of research, who you are, where you've been. I see everything from some of my favorite TV shows and movies.
Homeland, that was a good one. Off Broadway show.
To the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Oh, good research.
Scooby-Doo.
Varied career and journey.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and the road to here?
Specifically.
At AfterBuzz right now?
At AfterBuzz.
All roads lead to AfterBuzz.
Specifically,
Just your background and your career.
I'm an Aries. I like long walks on the beach. Journey never gets old.
So your favorite characters that you've played, or theater versus TV, just your thoughts.
My mom always says, like, I'll do a job, like, that was my favorite job, or that was it. She's like, you know, you always say that. So it's hard to pick a favorite or so forth. And it's also hard to pick, like, which do you like more, television or theater? I like a good story, mm-hmm. and I like a good role. So I try to kind of let that lead me. Lately, the last few years, I have been working more in television, and it's been working better for my sort of like work-life balance and schedule. It's easier to kind of like have, you know, when I noticed that I'd been doing so many plays in New York, after a while I was getting exhausted, and it was hard to, you know, I'm not married or I don't have kids or anything, but I could see that it would be hard to start a family with a theater schedule, because you're working all on the weekends. And also just the mathematics of it, the mathematics of career. I was like, I'm doing this play. I'm working my butt off, cutting a vein open, and we're a hit, and the New York Times loves us, and it's this big off-Broadway show. And if at the end I'll do the math, and actually like 4,800 people saw it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, say one line on the blacklist.
Yep.
And, you know, 15 million, 20 million Americans, how many around the world? And I realized that I wanted to spend a little more time giving myself more, being able to have a little more choice and power, or it's the wrong word, access to other things. I knew that I kind of wanted to focus more into it. Also, I get very intense and obsessive about my work and my roles, and going to the theater every night, I found myself going a little bit crazy, actually. So I love it. I come from the theater. It's what I'll always do. But I knew I needed to move away from it a little bit and focus a little bit on TV so that I can do theater a little more picky and choosy and so forth.
Let me follow up on that, because I find this fascinating, because I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
So I love theater. I grew up watching Broadway and doing all that. And I see the shows that tape out of the East Coast. Like, The Good Wife's a perfect example.
Yeah.
They use so many Broadway actors.
Yeah.
They use it.
There's 40 shows in New York now.
Yeah, there's so many.
There's a tax break there, so it's a huge benefit for all.
But they take so many theater actors nowadays. There's so much more work for theater actors that are starting to move into TV, even with character roles or whatever else. And you've been able to do a lot so far with your career. Do you see the differences working on a TV show out on the East Coast as opposed to what people do out here in LA?
The difference
with the actors and the cast. You mentioned you got a lot of friends in this.
Well,
episode.
Because I come from the theater. Yeah. The beauty of being able to do a show over there is I get to do. You know, I can't do a play because the blacklist schedule won't allow that right now. But yeah. I can do readings. I can do workshops. I can see other friends' plays. I might like work on directing something. So I have. But while I was in LA, I directed a play here, and I was seeing shows here. So I've always kind of, doesn't matter which coast I'm on, I'm always kind of staying sort of like on the pulse of what's going on in the theater world, just keeping tabs on it to a certain degree. And in LA, I guess the one of the things I miss about LA is, you know, there's so many more comedies out here. There's not that many in New York. So, and I love doing comedy as well. So if I had like an off week or something and I could do a comedy or I could get on a Modern Family or a Big Bang, that would be a treat. So, but I'll get on a plane. I'll get on a plane and go anywhere if the role is good.
Modern Family, Big Bang.
As a theater actor, we've only got a couple more minutes here, but as a theater actor, like, what was your first, did you see Birdman yet, by the way?
I have.
That's awesome. Just all this talk is really Birdman. You guys as two theater actors need to see that movie.
Emotionally, I wish I had a stronger reaction. Like, aesthetically and cerebrally, I loved it, but I thought I would love it in every way. I think that's going to win an Oscar for cinematography.
Oh, yeah. Well, the technically it's a great movie, but the acting is superb. We're in the wrong podcast, but I want to ask you, go see Birdman, everyone. You guys especially.
This is AfterBuzz TV.
Yes. But what was the first role as a theater actor? What was the first television role that you thought, oh, I'm a TV guy now? What was it for your first big break when you thought, like, okay, well, I'm doing this now? What was the first thing?
The first big role, the first guest star I had was on a show called The Jury in 2004, a Barry Levinson show.
Yep.
And so that was the first time I was like, the first sort of meaty part that I had. But I recurred on SVU for a bunch of years. And I've always said that was kind of like my graduate school in television acting. Because, you know, I didn't have to carry the story, but I played a doctor and I was with the big stars, Chris Maloney and Mariska Hargitay. So you have to stand opposite these behemoths of television and deliver a lot fast and a lot of technical. That's probably where I developed my technical talk. Maybe, I'm not sure. I noticed how fast things go and how much you have to prepare and how quick it happens, but I didn't have to carry story. I just had to carry the weight of just deliver that information. So it was a great opportunity to learn how to walk and talk and act with big stars on a television set and how fast it goes. So I always call that, I never think in terms of breaks. I always like, that was sort of like the most growth I had, and really learned, like, not master is the wrong word, but really felt confident after I really felt a lot more confident on a television set and a television landscape.
It's such a difference between, you know, acting on stage and television. So when you felt most comfortable.
It's true. But I still use theater preparation for all my scripts or blacklist scripts. It's still, you know, it's fun as, you know, Harry comes from the theater and Majan comes to the theater as well. And we always talk about the scenes in a certain, with sort of like a theatrical approach and so forth. And I like to do the scenes. People are like, they do pickups and so forth. And I was like, I love to do the scene in its entirety. What was so fun last year when me and James did that scene where he does the gun, he's like, I'm going to strip and reassemble this in 2 minutes. And if that time, we ran it in real time in 2 minutes. So it was really like, and that, it just made it more fun. I actually think there's an opportunity for the way I work, more spontaneous moments can happen, and stuff that you can't expect happens when you're running a scene in its full length, as opposed to just doing a pickup.
Yeah,
we need
totally.
That line, or we need that piece.
Absolutely.
Or something.
We were talking about True Detective last year, where they had that amazing long shot, that one shot, and the tracking shot. How long was it? Like almost 6 minutes.
It was like a 6 minute
shot.
First time I saw it was in Boogie Nights. Remember them Boogie Nights?
The opening sequence. A lot of that in Birdman. More Birdman. Last but not least, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the obligatory question: what's it like working with the great James Spader? Like, you talked about the scene. I mean, you don't have a lot of scenes together, but you do obviously work with him. I mean, is that everything it's cracked up to be? I'm sure it is.
I love being able to call James Spader my colleague.
Yeah,
you know, he sets the bar for the show and for all of us, and. So when you get to get on set with him, you know, you've hope you've done your work so that you can, you know, play ping pong with him.
Sure.
He's absolutely charming and a gentleman and funny and prepared and focused and vocal and helpful and I mean, it's terrific. Yeah. I love making him laugh, too. He's I love, great. Like, it's...
And he's also, we were at Comic-Con. He's the king of Comic-Con this year. Yeah.
He's got Ultron
He's Ultron, and he's Ultron, and he's friend. So that's that.
Just to follow up on that really quick, but just curious, I mean, as far as the character right now that you're dealing with James, with Amara and... Aram.
I get it.
Holy moly. Aram.
That's okay. Amar. That's what they gave my stand.
Aram and Red. What's going on right now as far as, you know, we've seen the Red working a little bit with him right now, giving him information, and we see that whole dynamic. So I know, just probably to lead us into predictions, I just really want to know what's going on in his mind right now between Red. Does he look up to Red in a way, or how does he?
What is in Aram's mind?
Yeah, what's in Aram's mind between this whole thing? I mean, we see there's something going on with him and Samar. But
it feels like he has an admiration for mostly, like, every you know, wrestler.
I'd love to hear your responses to that, and then I'll tell you what I think.
Just to follow that question, wrestler and Harold are obviously super suspicious, and now Megan as well.
Of Lizzie, Red.
Super suspicious. You were kind of, like, happy to, oh, Red picked me. What's your view of Red? I mean Aram's view of it.
He's very well aware of his history. Of an international criminal and so forth. And so he's well aware of how dangerous he is. At the same time, this entire task force only exists because Raymond Reddington turned himself in. And it's a secret task force. So, like, everything kind of rests on his shoulders. And at the same time, I think one of the reasons he's so protective of Megan's character is because Red says he'll only speak with her. And he knows that there's some manipulation of her life. So, but at the same time, Aram's gotten a promotion to work on this in this task force on these, like, super cases is a dream come true for him. So there's great respect, but also great awareness of the danger of this man. So I think it's almost like an adrenaline excitement nervousness that happens at both like, this man is extremely shrewd and extremely dangerous. I hope he's not playing us all. Mm. I hope he's not playing. But it doesn't matter. In order to get to the next day, in order to make it to tomorrow, in order to make it to the next case, we must work with him. We must keep him happy. Now, also, the one thing I know is that he held a gun to me. He also made me transfer $5 million.
Yes.
That nobody knows about. Yeah. I did a major illegal action.
I got something over you, too.
Correct.
Over everyone.
So, I
No, that's
all that stuff, and then when you get the script or you get the scene, you want to find the thing that's most playable, whatever aspect of that is the most dynamic or most sort of that comes out. But you have all those little pieces running out there. So far, I love that line in that one episode. I was like, so you want me to find a girl, da 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 da, and none of the other people who work for you were able to find him. He's like, that's correct. Of the other these people who couldn't find her, what'd you do to them?
I love that. Those are those little character moments we talk about. Those are things we're, Aram. So Aram. let's jump into predictions and try to let's jump into predictions.
You're after Buzz TV predictions.
Since we have you here,
tell us everything.
Here, we're gonna watch you. Watch Julia give a prediction.
Oh, that's mean.
I thought I was off the hook for once.
That's good.
Oh, God. Okay. I predict...
Are we just predicting next week? Or are we predicting for...
It can be next week, but just... It's open.
Okay, this one might be a little wacky. But I think... First, let me start by saying I think that Lizzie has learned a little something from Red and this whole doing people favors, holding a little something over people. That being said, I think that Tom is going to manipulate her to a point where they might become intimate, and then she might kill him, and then she might use Wrestler to help her hide the body because she's holding something over him.
This would turn into a Tarantino movie.
Wow.
What happened here?
All shot in reverse.
What happened here?
And at the end, John Travolta is wearing a t-shirt. Okay.
And that happens in the first 10 minutes of next week's episode.
I'm not saying next week.
I know.
I'm not too far away from you on that, but I'll get to
you
that.
You looked at me like I was crazy.
It was
a little crazy.
Flip out, what do
you got? All right. I got a prediction here. Seeing now that we know that Berlin's daughter is Zoe / Jennifer, and she's not dead, obviously, and Red had nothing to do with ever not killing her because she isn't dead. So now we got to find out who set up Berlin and Red in opposition to each other. I think Alan Alda's character and that whole cabal is going to make a little comeback there, and we're going to find out what they had to do with that and why they were manipulating these two guys. I also have a prediction. There's more of a hope than a prediction. I hope that Diego has an episode where he doesn't shave. That is my hope.
Get off, you know.
I want the man to not shave.
He doesn't miss a shave. Addicted to pills. Like, he doesn't miss a shave because
he shaves every 7 hours. I want him to miss a shave.
Maybe he's former military. Maybe he wants to keep clean shaven.
I'd love to.
Man's in a coma and he shaves every day. I don't understand.
So wait, I want to be clear. You're thinking that Berlin and Red are going to be working together?
Together to figure out who set them in opposition to each other, because that's their true enemy, because they've been messed with by somebody else. So I think that's going to be Alan Alda and his crew.
I like that idea of Red and Berlin working together. I actually would say that's based on what we just saw, that now that Berlin sees his daughter and he realizes Red is not the true enemy, I could see them working together. I think it would be a very interesting team up, especially because I love Berlin. I love, Schonmeyer. He's amazing. I also think that based on that one little line Red gave in the car with Lizzie about whether or not she killed Tom, but, you know, if you didn't kill Tom, I would think he was your source. I think Red knows.
Oh, Red knows.
Red totally knows it. And I think Red is totally playing Lizzie right now.
Smartest guy in the world.
That jumped in my prediction.
He doesn't have confirmation because, remember, Ezra got locked up.
Yeah.
Ezra was the one who found out. That's like the British guy who's been tracking her.
Hot sniper guy.
As soon as he found out, he goes, do you want to tell Reddington or should I?
Right.
And so that means Reddington doesn't know.
Yes.
Totally. He's not confirmed. Maybe he knows
to a certain degree, but I feel like
he's very smart, so he's deduced it. Yeah. That's my take. Mm-hmm.
That's a good take.
Well, he probably knows more than
he
we do.
My quick prediction, we're still over. My quick prediction is that I believe Tom is, I'm saying Tom is, he's just getting information. I feel like that he's playing Lizzie as well. I feel like that he, they keep cutting through those chains. I don't know. I feel like that he is probably more able to get free than, you know, than let's on.
Yeah. I was thinking that,
like,
too.
I feel like that something about that, like, they keep showing the chains.
That's true. Good point.
I just feel
good
like, you know, Tom's sort of getting information. I don't know if it's for Red. I don't know what his motive is, but that's happening there. Any last prediction from you, Amir?
Prediction?
I mean, I know that you know stuff, but maybe
I predict a long game prediction. Cat fight between Megan's character and Mojan's character over Aram.
Yes!
and that he's, you know, he has to take over the task force because everyone's captured.
Well, yeah, of course. Duh.
Decide. I don't know. No. Okay. Here's the truth.
Yes.
This is the truth.
I know
what happens next week because we finished shooting it.
Sure.
That's it.
Okay.
Oh, that's all you know.
You guys aren't that far ahead.
Here's what's up.
I know, JT. We're getting out of here, JT. I know. We're almost done.
next week is the fall finale. And then we go on hiatus for, I think, 2 months. And then we come back with episode 9, which is a huge Joe Carnahan-directed cliffhanger episode after the Super Bowl.
Oh!
Dun, dun, dun!
Oh. That's a big episode.
And then, after that, is another huge cliffhanger, where then we come back Thursdays at 9.
Oh!
Yes.
Wow. Dropping bombs.
Write it down.
So this, and we haven't shot those yet. I haven't even gotten those scripts.
So Mondays are over.
So I really only know, one episode more than you.
That's a
at this moment right now.
That's a hot moment here. For you Blacklist fans, adjust your TiVos in February.
Yeah, you're moving to Thursdays, kids.
That's good. Our DVRs. I say TiVos.
You did.
Thank you so much for coming on our show.
It's been really fun. I have to say.
Thank you. I just remember we had Gray. You said Gray. We had Charles Baker on. Our first episode.
Oh, we did.
So you are second guest. But our first this season.
Our very first episode.
Right on. But he tried to get me killed.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Lucy won that battle. he's not sitting there with us. Anything besides Blacklist, anything else you want to talk about or anything else?
Thank you. I have a movie opening on Friday. It's a little bit bittersweet. It's Merry Friggin' Christmas. Yes. It was one of Robin Williams' last movies.
Yeah, that's right.
It's got a really incredible sort of cast.
Joel McHale,
Wendy McLevin. Am I saying that right? Wendy
McCovey.
Yeah.
Oliver Platt, Jeffrey Tambor, Clark Duke, Candice Bergen.
Yeah.
But the leads are Joel McHale and Robin Williams. And it's a father-son Christmas movie. And it's a really, really sweet movie. And And that comes out on Friday. I play Farhad. An Afghan immigrant who speaks no English in that movie. So. same thing as Aram. And I got some other stuff, but that's happening. Okay. That's happening now.
And where can we find you on social media?
I have a Twitter handle.
Okay.
Amir Arison is my Twitter handle. It's my name.
Adam,
it's pretty
Arison.
Simple. And
A-I-R-S-O-N.
Yeah, I'm not really. My Facebook is just like a private account, and right. I'm working on it. Right. I'm working on. I know.
It's okay.
I'm representing the techie guys out there.
Twitter's perfect.
Twitter's
what's now. Twitter's what's current.
Nando V, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L, and here after Buzz for Homeland, Scorpion, and since we mentioned both those shows this episode, and some other stuff too. I can't remember right now.
It's fine.
Something else. Oh, Walking Dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Joe Flippo.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, G-O-E-F-L-I-P-O, and my website is josephsanfilippo.com.
Nice.
Julia?
My turn. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram with my name, Julia Carely, J-U-L-I-A-C-E-A-R-L-E-Y.
And I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell, at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you all for joining us and listening to us. And thank you all for downloading us on iTunes. Please continue to do so. Please continue to rate us. Thank you all for been rating us on iTunes. All of our loyal YouTubers, thank you so much as well for listening and commenting. And your comments have been fantastic. We read every single one. We really appreciate it. Well, we didn't do shout outs this week, but I don't know. The Audible family.
We had some stuff going on.
Yes.
Okay. It was a little busy.
That's all we got, right?
That's all we got.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll see you again next week. Amir will be here every single episode. So next week, we'll get a little more.
No. After Buzz Bucks.
But thanks. We'll see you next week, After Buzz. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks.
Hey.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.